Whether you're here in person or checking us out online, we're excited that you're here as we arrive at the finish line with our fifth and final part of this series that we have been in called Faithful. And if you've been here for any part of this series, what you know is that this entire series is predicated around this tension that every single one of us experience in our lives and we witness in the world around us. You see, what we see within our own lives, within the world that we live, is that we are a people who are drained physically, mentally, emotionally, and even spiritually in our lives. And yet we find ourselves consistently looking for a solution to that tension, a fix to our tanks that have been completely drained from the bottom. And yet everything that we have tried that the world has offered us seems to run out. Everything that we have tried from the world around us seems to come up short in our attempts to quench what is empty. You see, we tried the vacation and it worked for a while, but we find ourselves back at the starting line again. The bigger paycheck was only a temporary fix. The yoga classes were only a temporary fix. And so where do we go from here? What do we do to begin to refill our tanks? What do we do to begin to live a life and have a future that's different than everybody else, that's better than what we're presently experiencing? And that's what this series is all about. This series is about offering an opportunity for every single one of us. For us to not live lives like the rest of the world, but for us to be able to have a faith and to have a future that is thriving and growing, that is healthier than what we're presently living. And you see, throughout this series, what we have predicated this series around is this belief. This belief that 2,000 years ago, when the God of the universe, our Savior, Jesus, stepped onto the pages of history, he extended an invitation. An invitation that had the potential to change our lives 2,000 years later, that has the potential to change our futures and the way in which we find ourselves running on empty and how we refill our tank. You see, 2,000 years ago, Jesus extended an invitation to his followers that was not, believe in me. Because Jesus knew that simply believing in him was easy. Anybody can do that, and just believing doesn't necessitate that you have to change. In fact, Scripture tells us that even the demons believe and tremble. But Jesus extended an invitation that was far different. You see, Jesus' invitation 2,000 years ago, and the one he still extends to you and I, was to follow me. And what we know about following is that following requires action. Following requires steps in the right direction, following behind the person who is leading us. And what we also know from Scripture is this, is that the writers define that faith without action is dead. That in order for us to experience and live out our faith in a world around us that desperately needs to see a glimpse of Jesus that they have not yet gotten, they need to see us begin to live out our faith and live out our love to the world around us. And so throughout this series, we've been presenting these opportunities, these five essentials in our lives that we believe with all of our hearts move our faith from frail and breakable to strong and immovable, to irresistible in a world around us, that if we are Christ followers, we have been extended an invitation and an opportunity to move our faith to a completely different level. But if you're sitting there this morning and you're not a Christ follower, you see, every single week of this series, we've made this known. That if you walked into this room and you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, or you're still kind of skeptical about this whole thing, there's good news. You see, this entire series is designed to give you an inside look into what we as Christ followers haven't always gotten right, into what we need to improve on, and how we haven't always done an incredible job of giving the world around us a glimpse of who Jesus actually is. And during this series, you get a pass. You can simply lean in with absolutely no requirements and get an inside look into what following Jesus really looks like and requires of us who consider ourselves to be Christ followers. And a couple of weeks ago, Des did an incredible job of really giving us this first step in this journey towards growing our faith and creating a faith that is thriving and strong in a world that we desperately need it in. You see, she introduced this reality that in order for our faith to grow, that we have to engage consistently in practical teaching. That we have to be willing to show up consistently in a place like this and be able to take what's written in here and make it real, make it relevant for how it's lived out in our life. Because simply knowing what's written in this book isn't good enough. Simply knowing what God says doesn't do anything for all lives, our futures, or the world around us. At some point, it requires us to move from just simply knowing to doing. And then a couple weeks ago, we continued the series by talking about this next step in the journey. That if we want our faith to go to an entirely different level, it requires us to be willing to push through our own inadequacies and say yes to God in serving other people. That there is this opportunity that is being presented to us as Christ followers. An opportunity to serve others and to step outside of our comfort zone that ultimately gives us the chance to experience God. In a way in which we will never experience it on the back of somebody else will do it. Somebody else will fill out the card. Somebody else will rock the baby. Somebody else will play the instrument. Somebody else will hand out the weekly. Somebody else will greet first-time guests. Somebody else will be a high school girls' small group leader. That ultimately, when we push through our inadequacies, and what we talked about, if you were here, you remember the lunchbox that week, that we are being called to simply bring what's in our lunchbox. Even though for some of us it feels like crumbs and there isn't a whole lot to offer, that when we do that, our inadequacies ultimately meet God's power. And in our weaknesses, we get to be a part of something incredible. Not because of what we are capable of, but because we have a God who, when we offer what we have, chooses to fill the gap. Chooses to bridge that span between what we're capable of and what we're being called to. And while we're on that topic, you know, we are on the cusp of something that we've been doing around here for 8 years now. Stand for Shelby is something that's near and dear to my heart. We believe with all of our hearts that it's a major part of our DNA in communicating this message, that we want to be about far more than what happens within these four walls. And we love y'all coming and being here on Sunday morning, but we want to communicate something different to our city and to a world around us that can only be communicated by us stepping out in action and serving other people under this premise. We don't care if you ever walk through the doors of this church, that we just want to love you in incredible and tangible ways. And here we sit 1 week away, and we're still only about halfway there in the amount of volunteers that we need to make this day as successful as it can be, that we're about 100 volunteers short of where we want to be to make the biggest difference we can in our world with our hands and with our feet. You see, there's an opportunity being presented to us, that this is simply a catalyst for us to begin to get a taste of how our faith grows and expands when we jump in with both feet and engage in personal ministry for the sake of the world around us. And then last week, we took a little bit of a turn. And we began to talk about this concept of how our pain and our suffering can actually be a catalyst for our faith. That as we go through hurt and our circumstances and our time here on earth, that our hurt and our pain is actually an opportunity for our faith to go through to a whole new level, because wrinkle-free days don't create great faith. Until what we claim to believe has been tested, we won't know what we actually believe. And when our faith is tested through our pain, our suffering, our trials here on earth, we actually come out the other side stronger and more capable of changing the world around us because we have gone through those trials. And furthermore, we address this concept that when we look at our lives and our pain and our hurt and our suffering with an eternal perspective, what we see is this. Not only does it begin to change and strengthen our faith, but it also begins to set an example for a world around us that is going through their own pain, their own suffering, their own hurt. That as we progress through it with a different mindset and a different mentality, that we give the world around us hope. And if we could look at our circumstances and our pain and our suffering under this premise, that my time here on earth is but a blip on the radar. And if my time here on earth has to be spent and used by going through some moments of pain and suffering to point to Jesus through those moments of pain and suffering so that somebody else's eternity could be changed like mine has already been changed, then would it be worth it? Would the pain and suffering under that eternal perspective be worth it in the end? That my pain, my suffering, my trials here on this earth are an opportunity to point other people to the hope and the love and the grace of Jesus Christ. And today, we finish this series off with maybe the hardest week of all. Buckle in. Or maybe it's just the hardest week of all for me. You see, for those of you who have been around here for any amount of time, what you know about Ben Carver is that I am an introvert. And in being an introvert, anytime the word community comes up, it sends a shiver through my spine. Because as an introvert, here is what community really looks like for me. It's not necessarily that I hate being around people, at least that's what I keep telling y'all. It's simply that in my life, relationship is more difficult. I'm gonna have to warm you up. Nobody even giggled at that one. It's this reality that it just takes more work for me to engage in conversation and to engage in relationship, and I come out the other side of engaging in relationship feeling more drained than what an extrovert would when they gain some momentum and they gain a little bit of energy from being around other people. And I have this deadly combination in my life. Not only am I an introvert, but I'm also a perfectionist. And the way in which that oftentimes fleshes out within community and my relationships is this. In being an introvert, right, I define for you that relationship becomes more difficult to me, and it takes a lot of thought to engage in conversation and to think through the right things that I want to say. And yet in being a perfectionist, because it's so difficult, what it means is I don't always get relationship right. There are often times within my conversations that I stick my foot in my mouth. And in being a perfectionist, how that plays out on the other end is this. Is that in the moments where I stick my foot in my mouth, I spend the next couple hours or next couple days rehashing in my mind, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Why did I go there? Why did I mess that up? What are they thinking of me now? And ultimately, in being an introvert where it's difficult, and in being a perfectionist where I make it even more difficult in the mistakes that I make within those relationships, what happens is this, is that Ben Carver often finds it easiest to retreat to his own turtle shell. That's where it feels safest to me, and that's where I know I'm not going to stick my foot in my mouth. That if I just retreat and I do life alone, that's where it becomes easiest to me. And maybe for some of you, you walked into this room and you have those exact same feelings when it comes to the word community, because you're an introvert as well. And community and relationship don't come easy to you, but maybe you find yourself on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And you walked into this room and you're an extrovert and you get charged up by relationship and you love being around people. And the best part of your week is when you get to be at a party and when you get to be surrounded by a group of people. And yet the battle you're fighting with this word community is unlike mine, but you're still fighting a battle. Because ultimately what the enemy wants you to believe is this. You've been in relationship and you know you need relationship, but what you recognize is that relationship is hard because you've been hurt in relationship. There's been a friend that stabbed you in the back, a previous spouse that's hurt you, a boss that said something that didn't rub you the right way, and you recognize that relationship is hard. And because you've been hurt in relationship and you don't like being hurt, none of us like being hurt, maybe it's just easiest if right now I don't engage in relationship to protect myself from being hurt. And so ultimately what we do is we step back and we pull back as extroverts under that lie that the enemy wants to communicate into our lives. That you would be a whole lot safer, and maybe right now is a season. You've got enough going on, life is chaotic enough for you to just pull back from community, and that way you won't get hurt. Or maybe it's neither of those. Maybe what you recognize is this ultimate truth that we've all experienced in starting relationships in our lives, and that's simply this. Like, I know the need for community, or I want community, but I've walked through enough relationship starting moments to know that starting relationship with anybody, no matter what my mentality or what my makeup is hard. Am I right? That when you start relationship with people, it doesn't matter if it's with the opposite sex, same sex, there's like awkward conversations that happen and you don't know each other. And it's like, is this really gonna work or is it not gonna work? And it just feels awkward at the beginning. And so I don't really wanna feel that awkwardness. I don't wanna engage in something not knowing if it's gonna work out on the other end. And so we just refrain from community altogether. And yet when we buy into those myths of our life, that the pain points ultimately outweigh the benefit of being in community, here's what we miss. We miss the moments of every single one of our lives and every single one of our stories that undoubtedly, if we got honest enough and looked close enough into our past, we would see them spike up again and again and again through statements like this. You see, all of us have lived moments in our past where we have had things happen, we've walked through circumstances, and ultimately we've thought something along this line. I am so glad he showed up in my life when he did. Like, I was walking through that, I was going through that, I was struggling with this, and I'm so glad he showed up in my life when he did. Or maybe Man, I was walking through that painful circumstance, and here I stand today, and I don't know if I would have made it through that without her. I don't know that I would have gotten through that painful moment and all that grief and all that hurt if I wouldn't have had that person to lean on and rest my head on and cry on their shoulder when I walk through that. Or maybe for some of us, it's this reality that what we know beyond a shadow of a doubt is I wouldn't be where I'm at without them. And you see, every single one of us can look back on our past and have one of those statements that consistently come to mind as we think about the moments of our lives. That I don't know that I would have made it through it without them. That I don't know that I'd be where I am without them. I'm so glad that they showed up and became a part of my life when they did. For you, maybe it's a parent or a sibling or a best friend or a counselor. For me, I look back on my life about 14 years ago. I was a 22-year-old kid just graduating from college, trying to enter into the big boy world and get my first job. And I oftentimes look back on 22-year-old me, any of y'all who are a little bit advanced in age ever do this, and I recognize about myself at 22, like, I cannot believe I was that immature. Like, I look back on my life, like, I don't know how I survived with all of my shortcomings and all my inadequacies. I cannot believe I actually did some of the things I did at 22. And yet, looking back, what I also see in that moment is this. Is that I sat down one afternoon for lunch with a pastor who I had never met, who had a large, growing, thriving organization. And after one lunch, sitting down with me, with all my shortcomings, all my inadequacies, all of the room I had to grow, and extended an opportunity, and gave me a chance. Frankly, you know, in the 7 years that I was with that organization, I've only worked at two organizations in my life, and I've absolutely loved them both. But consistently, as I look back on that season, and I look back on the opportunity that was extended to me, I am frequently met with this thought. There is absolutely no way I deserved the opportunity that was given. There's absolutely no way at 22 years old that they should have extended that opportunity and given me that chance. And yet I found a man in my life, a pastor, who had plenty to do, was launching multi-site, was leading a church of about 5,000 people, who was willing to sit across the table from me and consistently invest in my life, consistently pour into me, consistently challenge me, consistently see more in me than what I saw in myself. And I'll never forget, as I was into my tenure there, I sat down in his office one day and I was like, Dwight, just in absolutely complete honesty, here's what I kind of feel like where my heart is being tugged. And I began to share it with him, like, I feel like I'm being called to be a lead pastor someday, but I just needed you to know, like, I don't think I'm qualified for that, and I don't know how to get there, and I don't know what to do. And I'll never forget, he looked back at me in that moment, and I was like, you know, do I go back, and do I get more initials after my name, more degrees? Is that what's going to make me qualified? And he's like, Ben, I see in you everything that you need. All you need to do is just completely pour yourself into this. And from that moment, in the confines of his office, he made a choice to put me and all my inadequacies and all my shortcomings on a campus pastor track. And here's the crazy thing about this moment. After what I had shared with him, he was setting me up with opportunities to become a pastor someday, fully knowing that those things most likely would not benefit his particular organization. He was willing to pour into me, and to this day, we still get together every 3 or 4 months, and he's willing, and everything that he's got going on, and here's this kid who's not a part of his organization, who's leading someplace else, that he's willing to sit down for hours at lunch with me and just pour into me. And y'all are great, but oftentimes willing to talk me off a ledge, and like, you're not crazy, and this isn't all you, and here's how you navigate this, and here's how you persevere through this, here's what God's still calling you to, that it was really this providential relationship in my life in which I know I would not be where I am today. But that's not the only one for me. You see, some of y'all could relate to this as well. If you have gotten to know me for any amount of time, what you also know is this. When you start to get to know Krista and I, it becomes pretty apparent pretty fast that that dude would not be where he's at without her. Amen. And furthermore, I know so many of y'all don't get to see what happens behind the scenes around here and everything that's involved in ministry and leading from the position in which I'm in. But what I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt, and just hear my heart on this, obviously I'm not talking about like the hand of favor of God and all that God does, because we know that that's a huge deal. But so much of what has been good that has happened around here has absolutely or very little to do with Ben Carver and has a whole lot to do with Krista. What she's invested and what she's poured in and what she's sacrificed and the way in which she's hopped on the back of this vision and this mission of like, this is a calling for our lives collectively, and I'm willing to sacrifice to allow you to pour yourself into that and to do what you need to do and to give up nights with us to be there till 8 at night, 10 at night, midnight, to get this done, to oversee this, to pour yourself into this. And what I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is I wouldn't be where I'm at, leading where I'm at, us doing what we're doing without Krista being a part of my life, without Krista being a part of our lives. And when we look back throughout the course of our lives and even our faith, if we are Christ followers, what every single one of us would attest to is this, is that there are little to no examples in our lives in which we have experienced successes that we are able to say those successes were at least partially reliant on somebody else. Am I right? I mean, go ahead, think about it for a moment. Are there any moments in your life in which you have experienced something successful where you can say, that was all me, baby? It wasn't my mom or my dad driving me there every single weekend, investing their money, investing their time so that I could get to this place. It wasn't that person who was willing to pour into me and invest in me so I could get that promotion or take a chance on me. Almost every single successful moment of our life at least has a hint of somebody else investing in it so that we could experience those successes. And yet we find a completely different story in the inverse. Most of the failures of our life could be deemed pretty singular, am I right? That most of the failures and the wrong turns and the bad decisions can be exclaimed with, that was all me, baby. I was the one who made that choice. I was the one who took that turn. I was the one who chose to go it alone. And ultimately, as we look back on those examples of our life, what we can deem is simply this, that doing life alone is dangerous. Because we never drift to the right places when left to ourselves. We never drift to the right places alone. But ultimately, we are pushed in the right direction when we surround ourselves with the right people. And it's the reason why we should all be diligent about seeking out faith-based people who approach their circumstances with a mindset of faith and approach their difficulties with a mindset of faith. Because ultimately, it helps determine the quality, the direction of our lives and our future. Every single one of us should be diligent about seeking out and being a part of community because it benefits our future and it ultimately grows our faith from this day forward. You see, ultimately, that's what Paul knew. When Paul began writing letters to the churches throughout the Mesopotamia basin, the very first letter that we get is this letter he writes to the church in Rome. And he begins to write to them about this reminder. This reminder of, don't forget, I know everything inside of you, everything outside of you is going to feed you these lies of how much easier it would be to do life by yourself. In the mess of the world around you, how much safer it would be. You think 2022 is messy? It was pretty messy back then as well. They were stringing up Christians on trees and lighting them on fire. That's the story of Nero. It wasn't easy. But in your life, don't forget the need to engage in community. It's the reason why he uses this analogy again and again and again. This analogy that we as humanity would fully understand of how important community and connectedness is for the sake of the body. We find this very first example in the book of Romans, chapter 12. Check this out with me. Starting in verse 4, Paul writes this. Just as our bodies have many parts, and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. Context, Christ's body, who's he talking about? Us, y'all. those of us sitting in this room who consider ourselves to be Christ followers. If you are a Christ follower, don't forget that each part is important and each part has its own special function. We are many parts of one body and we all belong to each other. See, as it continues, Paul uses this analogy, like I said, again and again, and it seems like each time he expounds upon it a little bit. And maybe some of us have heard when he used the analogy in this way, that the foot can't look at the hand and say you're useless because you're not a foot. For each of us have our own special things that we have been gifted with and we have been called to carry out. For the foot moves so that the hand can get where it needs to go to do what the hand has been called to do. You see, it's like Paul understood this reality that oftentimes for us as humanity is so hard to grasp, that growth happens best in circles, not in rows. In our life, regardless of the area of our life, growth happens best in circles, not in rows. And hear me on this, y'all. We love having you here. Don't stop coming here. But the reality is the ultimate goal for the growth of our faith and the strength of our faith isn't for us to simply remain in rows and show up here on Sunday and check the box and feel like that's going to be good enough to create a strong and immovable and contagious faith for our world. It's got to go to the next level, and the next level is taking it from a row into a circle, to link arms and to do life with other people. I'll never forget years ago, I was in student ministry at the place I told you about before I had an opportunity to come back home, and I encountered this guy, and I started taking him out to lunch, and as we were out to lunch, I started to uncover he would share more and more of his story. What I began to learn as he began to share his story was that essentially he was going through a valley of life and faith. Much like your and my story, his story was much the same. There were high moments and there were low moments, but he was going through about the lowest of lows. And in this, he had walked away from the church, he had walked away from ministry altogether and serving other people, and ultimately, he had experienced an affair with his wife. And his marriage was in shambles. And as we sat and we talked over lunch multiple times, he began to tell me this story and the way in which, like to a T, this is what he said. He said, one day I was with a group of my friends that we all worked together in the same workplace, and they tricked me into being in a men's group. Like, they told me, like, they were just getting together to hang out. I was like, I can hang out. I can do that. It's just going to be a party, and that sounds like a good time. And eventually, when I showed up, it began to morph into this men's group. And yet, what I found as I came back time and time again was this. Here were a group of guys who accepted me. A group of guys who had not done what I had done, and yet they never looked down on me. A group of guys who were willing to challenge me and push me and invite me into their group and their circle and wanted to be a part of my life and, in inverse, wanted me to be a part of theirs as well. And what I began to experience on the back end of this guy's life as he got tricked into being a part of community is that ultimately his faith began to re-engage, began to grow, and I recruited him to be a part of my team, and he became a part of my teaching team in front of students. And many Sundays I was like, dude, you communicate way better than I do. You need to be up there on stage communicating. He just had this incredible way to connect with students. And his marriage began this healing process and was put back together and was healthy as could be. And it all happened on the back end of engaging in community and linking arms with a group of people in the midst of his brokenness that ultimately propelled him forward. And yet, you want to know the saddest and realest part of the story? After I left, he had kind of stepped in a little bit and was like, hey, in this transition season, I want to be a part of moving this forward and continuing this direction and this momentum that we have, and so I'm going to step in and do that. And he had done an absolutely incredible job at it, and a couple years later, I'd stayed loosely in contact with him. I began to see that his story had taken a turn again, a pivot. And ultimately, as I talked with him, what I came to learn was this. Man, life just got crazy and busy, and we were running our kids all over the place, and I was trying to start a business. And ultimately, I just realized, like, I just didn't have time for the group anymore. And it was just a season, like, I was just taking a break. And I told the guys, you know, I just can't do this anymore. I just don't have time for this anymore. And I backed away. And it was like clear as day from the outside looking in that you experienced as he got tricked into being a part of a men's group and engaging in community, that his life and his faith took a drastic turn for the better. And in the immediate aftermath of him making a decision that, you know what, right now it's just easier for me to do life by myself, his marriage began to crumble again, ultimately leading to a divorce. Began to step out of ministry completely and started to drift from his faith and completely walked away from the church. Ultimately, from the outside looking in, it was like it's so obvious. But there was this one thing that predicated whether your faith and your life and your relationships went to a better level or whether they went to a worse. And it was all about community. It was all about pushing through what was uncomfortable for the sake of what was best. You see, every single one of us in this room have that choice as well. A choice of whether or not we're going to engage with what's difficult and hard. And trust me, it will be messy and there will be brokenness at times and it won't always be easy. But are we willing to push through what's difficult and what's uncomfortable for the sake of what's best? Or are we just wanting to continue to be Christ followers who play it safe and choose the easy route, leaving our future solely up to me? Because left to do life by ourselves, did I say this yet? Left to do life by ourselves is the most dangerous place, is the most dangerous way we can do life. We need other people. We need other people to push us forward, to challenge us, to hold us accountable. Because without accountability, we have the ability to do whatever we want. And that's not the healthy way to do life. Come on, y'all. That's tweetable. Do I need to say it again? Without accountability, we have the ability to do whatever we want. And that's not the healthiest way for us to do life. It's not the healthiest path for our future. And I think it's the very reason why the writer of Hebrews writes this to you and I as Christ followers, this challenge to you and I for the sake of our futures in our lives and our relationships and our marriages within our workplaces, but also for the sake of the future of our faith. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23, he writes this. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And I love this word picture. He uses this word that's translated into unswervingly, and where does our mind automatically go when we think of swerving? To a car, to a road, a path. And let's hold ourselves to stay on the right path, headed in the right direction with our lives, not swerving no matter what myths, no matter what lies, no matter what challenges of the world or our circumstances bombard us with. Let us hold tightly to our hope, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Hello, y'all, right here, fits right in with this series. What's he talking about? And let us consider how we challenge and push each other, love and good deeds. What's he talking about? Putting our faith into action. That our faith is best put into action and grows best when we are pushed and challenged and inspired within the context of community by other people. And let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. Let us not, no matter how difficult it gets, get out of the habit of meeting with one another, no matter what anybody else does, no matter what the world tells you, no matter what the world does. And it's like the writer of Hebrew was echoing this message into our very souls. Proximity matters for your faith. Proximity matters for growing your faith. If you want to grow your faith, you need to be in close proximity to other people who have faith. Because here's the reality, y'all. This is the truth of the matter. People typically walk away from their community of faith before they walk away from their faith. Like, very rarely, if ever, do people just up and walk away from their faith because they picked up a book about Darwin. what typically happens first is they begin to distance and separate themselves from their community of faith, from the people who are challenging and pushing them in the right direction. And then left to themselves, they begin to pose their own questions and have their own doubt and choose their own direction that leads them in the wrong way. You see, we weren't meant to do life alone. And when we lose contact with people of faith, we miss an important element that has the potential to consistently bolster our faith. You see, if you're a Christ follower in the room, one of our deep desires within our souls is this, and you can help me out on this. One of our deep desires as Christ followers is we want to actually see Christ. Am I right? Like, I want to see him moving. I want to know what he's doing. I want to know what his plan is for me. I want to see his hand in my situation and my circumstances. And if you've been a Christ follower for any amount of time, what you know is this, is that as humanity, oftentimes we don't get that luxury on a daily basis. Am I right? Sometimes we don't get it on a weekly or a monthly basis. When left to ourselves to look at how God's hand is moving, it is moving, but we don't see it as humanity. We don't get that experience frequently. But what increases the probability of us getting to see God's hand move is for us to be in community with other people. And to have the opportunity to see God's hand move, not just in our own story, but in the stories of other people. You see, while God moving and God's hand at work bolsters our faith, what we also must recognize is that God's hand moving in somebody else's story is also an incredible way for our faith to be bolstered. And this is why. Because when we see God's faithfulness in somebody else's story, it becomes far easier for us to trust him with ours. When we see God's faithfulness and his hand moving in somebody else's story, it becomes far easier for us to trust him with ours. We have to stay connected. Staying connected bolsters and grows our faith. And it won't be easy, but what I can promise you is if we can push through the hard stuff in the end, it will be worth it. You see, I'm an introvert, y'all. I've been doing small group for the last several years. I have a men's group that I'm a part of. Let me just tell you, at the beginning, it was difficult. And hear me on this, it isn't always easy because those dudes are messed up. And so am I. Relationship is hard. But what I recognize is this, as we've pushed through that hard stuff, now when we come together and we do group together and we get together and we have discussion and we move through stuff on a night, I don't leave there as an introvert drained. Now that we've pushed through the hard stuff and it's become easier and it's become natural, now I leave there as an introvert within the context of community, energized. Something that doesn't make sense and yet the God of the universe knew. This doesn't always have to make sense. I've created this upside down kingdom where when you engage in the things that I'm calling you to engage with, it does things that you never dreamt it would do. It begins to change your life and change your story for the better. You see, we can't let the enemy win. We can't let him win in our stories and our marriages and our parenting and our finances and our impact on the world around us by listening to his lies and pulling back and believing life is easiest when it's done by ourselves. It never works out the way it's been promised to work out. But the reality is while community is powerful for our lives and our future, what we're wondering is this. Well, how do I harness that power for my life? How do I tap into that power with some practical things I can do to engage in some community that will take my faith to a different level? You see, this morning where I want to finish is this. I want to finish with four ridiculously practical things. And some of you are like, 4 points just starting. Now, how long are we going to be here? These are going to be quick because they're practical and easy. But when we choose to push through what may be uncomfortable and engage in some of these four things, we will experience the benefit in the aftermath. The first is this. It's simple. This is what we've set the table for. But if we want to tap into the power of community for the sake of our future, we have to be people who are willing to get into a group, to have community in our lives. And one of the wisest dudes to ever walk on this earth outside of Jesus, King Solomon, he wrote this. as iron sharpens iron, so one friend sharpens another. You know what that means? You know how knives are sharpened? They must be in close proximity with each other. And Solomon is setting the table for you and I. If you want to be the sharpest tool you can possibly be, the way in which you accomplish that is by running into other people, is by doing life with other people. And for us, within our kid men, within our student men, what we believe about our kids is this, is that your child's faith is largely dependent on the faith of the people around them. That's what we believe about every kid that enters into Velocity, every kid that enters into the Little Safari, that your kid's faith is largely dependent on the faith of the people around them. And yet, here's what we miss, y'all. That doesn't change from 5 to 35. It doesn't change from the time you become a kid to when you become an adult. The same rings true in every single one of our stories. Your faith is largely dependent upon the people around you. And we tell students this all the time, that your friends determine the quality and direction of your life. The people you choose to do life with will ultimately determine your future. And when you make the wrong choices about who you surround yourself with, your life will move in the wrong direction. And some of y'all are like, I wish somebody would tell my student that. Hello? We've got a place that will tell your student that. But sometimes you have to help them be engaged in small group. Hello? It just got painful. We just moved from friend to parent. We have to help our kids begin to move in a direction that sets their futures up for the greatest possible success. But let's go back to the starting point. Your friends determine the quality and direction of your life does not change from 14 to 40. It's the same for us as adults. That same truth rings true. If you want your faith to grow, get in a group. The second practical opportunity that you have is to maybe step outside of your comfort zone even further, and you're like, I've done community, but I want other people to have the opportunity to engage in community and grow their faith. And what I recognize is that people being in community and people being in group only rises to the ceiling of group leaders. We can't have a small group without a group leader, without someone who's willing to step forward and lead. And you see, we go with all of our hearts after incredible small group leaders for our kids, for our students. And newsflash for y'all, great small group leaders that we're looking for are not biblical scholars. Hello. They are people who are simply willing to engage and invest and pour their lives into and be honest and authentic and transparent. That as your group leader, sometimes there are questions that you're going to answer that I can look back at you and say, I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to learn that in my own faith as well. Let's learn it together. Let's figure it out together. That if you want men to be able to engage in group and have community in their life, what would it look like for you to take that step of faith and to say, well, maybe it's time for me to step up and to be a small group leader, to lead men in that endeavor, and not to have all the answers, not to be a biblical scholar, just to say, I'll say when and where we're meeting, and I'll use the resources that are given to me, and we'll trudge through this together. Josh is going to kill me, but I'm going to say it anyways. I told you I've been leading a group for years. At the very outset of our group, you know what the decision we made was? We all have kids. We all have spouses. We all have crazy busy lives. And so we're going to make a choice as a group. Community is important, and we're going to meet once per month under this premise. Every time we meet, we're going to agree on a time that we're going to meet, and everybody's going to be there. If we're only going to do it once a month, then we're going to commit that we are all going to be there once a month. The reality was, it wasn't this giant commitment on me to lead a group once a month. It was pushing through the uncomfortableness, and it was coming up with a solution that didn't make leading hard, but leaving was just as valuable. We have an opportunity to get in a group, to lead a group, and then third, to invest and invite. To be willing to invest in somebody's life, a neighbor, somebody across the street, somebody in your workplace at the cubicle right next to you, somebody in your family that you haven't connected with in a while, to invest relationally in them. And then ultimately, as you invest in their life, at some point to have the courage to invite them to be a part of something that could grow their faith and introduce them to Jesus in a completely different way. There's this incredible story when Jesus started approaching the disciples and started inviting them. He finds this dude named Philip, and he goes, and he's like, same invitation, Philip, follow me. Like, I'm not even sure what answer Philip got. He's like, whoa, 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 hang on just a second, Jesus. And he walks away, and he goes and finds his friend Nathanael. And we see in John chapter 1, this happens. Philip went to look for Nathanael and told him, we have found the very person Moses and the prophets wrote about. His name is Jesus, the son of Joseph from Nazareth. We've been waiting 400 years for the Messiah, and we finally found him. He's here. You got to come and see this. You got to come experience this. You got to come and sit with me. You got to come and listen. You got to come and just check it out for yourself. I'll pick you up. You can ride with me. You can sit in the seat next to me. And like Nathanael's initial response is like, Nazareth, can anything good come from Nazareth? And Philip immediately chimes back, just come and see. No pressure, just come and see. He had invested in the friendship, and then when the moment came, he had the courage to reach out and invite. And I can guarantee you, there is not a moment in either Philip or Nathanael's story in which they look back and regretted that moment, where somebody had the courage to step out and invite somebody to be a part of something that changed their life and changed their eternity for forever. Just last month, in my small group, one of our guys was telling his story. He said, you know how I ended up at CORE? Somebody had the courage, one of my friends, had the courage to invite me to just come serve at Stand for Shelby. And I was skeptical about church and this whole Jesus thing, but just serving our city resonated with me. So I showed up, and I served. And I had fun, and I loved the people that I was working with, and so I decided, well, maybe I'll give Sunday morning a try. And the rest is history. Now CORE is home, and I serve, and I'm a part of a small group, and I'm on the board of the Dream Center. All because somebody had the courage to invest in my life and then at the appropriate time invite. Somebody somewhere is waiting for you to have the courage to do the exact same thing. And then lastly, we become people in a community that's willing to consistently look at our lives and the issues of our world in a manner in which we are committed to build a bridge that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth. We live in a world in which everyone wants to shout at the top of their lungs what they believe and what they think is truth, thinking that if I shout through social media at the top of my lungs, somehow it'll convince somebody else when all we're doing is driving a deeper wedge between us and the other side. What the world needs? The world doesn't care how much you know until they know how much you care. The world needs a group of people who are willing to invest relationally in others, to know their story, to empathize with them first, to build a bridge on relationship that hopefully one day will grow into something that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth. See, here's where we finish, y'all. Every single one of us have this opportunity that lies out in front of us, has an opportunity to take our faith to a whole nother level. But oftentimes it requires us to engage in the uncomfortable, to take a step we've never taken before, and to trust in taking that step it will pay dividends on the other side. You see, some of us have an opportunity that lies out in front of us to say yes, and to just step out and do something, to give community a try in a way we never have before. And maybe, just maybe, we step into the uncomfortable and we take a chance, maybe, maybe not, like these guys were willing to do.